Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Chad, give us the latest AP Top 25 poll and where Tennessee is now ranked currently.
Tennessee falls all the way to number 5 in the latest ranking. Duke number 1, Gonzaga 2, Virginia 3, Kentucky 4. So what was 5 versus 1? Kentucky wins. They move up one spot to 4. Tennessee drops down to 5. I think it's a bit of an overreaction, quite frankly, to one loss on the road for a team that hadn't lost since November 23rd.
Well, how do you feel if you're Kentucky? You beat number one and you move one spot.
I also don't think it matters right now at all.
Maybe not.
For Kentucky or Tennessee.
John Feinstein joins us. John, how are you?
I'm well, Jonathan. John.
Thank you. Thank you, Johnny.
I just in terms of the polls, the last thing Chad said is the most important. It doesn't matter. I mean, the polls do not matter. They're just fun. They're there for, as a conversation piece for all of us who follow college basketball. I probably overreacted to Tennessee's loss myself. I had them number one almost the entire season, and I dropped them to 6. So maybe I'm a bad guy today, but I put Gonzaga 1 because they beat Duke head to head, and that to me outweighs anything else. It was a neutral court game, and Gonzaga hasn't lost since December, and Duke's lost once, granted on a night when Trey Jones was hurt. But I have Gonzaga 1, and I guess maybe I'm overrating Michigan, but I think Michigan's very good. They had an easy win over a ranked team on Saturday. So I dropped Tennessee to 6, but it doesn't matter. And I think I have Kentucky 5. I have Michigan 4. And again, you'll say, well, why didn't you move Kentucky up? It's a win on your home court. It was an impressive win, but it was a win where they were coming off a controversial loss. Calipari gets them all wound up when it's a big ESPN game, which it was. One of the few games that ESPN didn't promote a Duke game more than, which because they're basically the Duke basketball network. But like Chad said, it doesn't really matter. Tennessee's still very good. They were due for a letdown, and they had one. You know, not necessarily a letdown. Maybe that's the wrong word, but they had an off night. Clearly, Kentucky's not that much better than them. You play those two again next week on a neutral court, I think the game goes to the wire.
Yeah, and Tennessee will get Kentucky in Knoxville in a couple of weeks, so we'll see that again. What jumps out to me in that game, John, is if you're putting a list together of 5, 6, 7 teams that could win it all, we all had Tennessee on that list throughout this year with what they've done. You mentioned Gonzaga and Duke. You put those teams up there as well.
Right.
Kentucky's on that list right now. They have greatly improved over the course of this year.
They always do. Look, I've said this before. I do get tired of hearing John Calipari complain about how young his team is every year because that's the program he's created. He's created a program built around freshmen every year, very, very talented freshmen. But he does a terrific job taking them from November to March. And they always do get better. And they're usually playing their best ball in March. And so people clearly overreacted to that Duke game on November the 6th, it proved that Duke is talented, which we know. But it didn't prove that much about Kentucky. And if they played Duke today, I think it'd be a very close game. And there are a bunch of teams, Gonzaga, Duke, Virginia, Michigan, Kentucky, Tennessee. Michigan State, if they ever get healthy, are to me, North Carolina, those are all teams that could certainly be in the Final Four and maybe even win a national championship. And we probably should not overlook either Houston or Nevada, because when you're that dominant in your own league, the way Gonzaga is, it means you're pretty darn good.
John, are there good losses this time of year in college basketball?
Uh, I'm not sure you ever call anything a good loss, but I know what you're saying. It's funny because I talked to Rick Barnes on Friday, and I said to him, you know, he would never say this, obviously. I said to him, it wouldn't be terrible for your team to lose a game right now because you get their attention. They stop thinking they're the greatest thing since sliced bread, which teams hear when they've won a bunch of games in a row. And I'm sure Rick gave the players Sunday off, and that they'll come back to practice today ready to dig in and try to prove the next time around that that was a one-time deal with that game in Lexington on Saturday night.
John Feinstein with us on the Midday 180.
What really surprised me about that game, John, was the level of physicality for Kentucky versus Tennessee, where it felt like they were better at playing Tennessee basketball than Tennessee was on that night. And bad nights happen. Tennessee shot poorly. Kentucky shot great. Those things right. happen. But that's the one that jumped out to me. And in terms of your conversation with Rick Barnes, it may be a loss being good. Maybe that's the takeaway, that they can't show up and play like that, especially against a team as good as Kentucky, and hope to even be close.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Chad. And my guess is that when they go through the tape of this game, Rick won't focus on the missed shots. There are nights when you miss shots. It happens. But he will focus on how Kentucky was tougher than they were. And Rick's teams, his best teams, have always prided themselves on toughness. This has been a tough team from the start of the season. Experience, we've talked about that. And they weren't tough on Saturday night. Whether the crowd got to them, whether the moment got to them, whether they had just been winning so often that they thought no matter what we do, because remember, they got back in the game late in the first half. What was it, 37-31 at halftime?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is going to be a close game. And then Kentucky just came out in the second half and blew their doors off. And that gets back to toughness. It does.
John Feinstein with us.
John, Daytona 500 yesterday, I was somewhat ashamed to not be fully aware, and by fully aware, I mean aware at all, that it was happening. What is the state of NASCAR in America right now?
I'm probably the worst person to ask in the world, Paul, because if anybody, I knew that Daytona 500 was yesterday.
You better man than
I. I didn't know when it started. Because it used to start very early in the day, and now they moved it later, haven't they? Am I right about that?
I don't.
Again, I'm showing my ignorance here.
I feel like it's always kind of late afternoon.
I'll go back and look that up and see if I'm wrong about that, Chad, because I seem to remember it used to start at noon. Maybe I'm just confusing it with the Indy 500, but point is,
I don't remember, John, it ending under the lights. I will say that, and it did last night.
Well, no, yeah, because I know the last few years they've started it late, and it was either last year or the year before when it was delayed by a day because of rain or something and was run almost totally under the lights. But, look, I'm going to plead ignorance here.
Once upon a time, it was growing, though. You heard it was taking off.
I think it definitely it reached a peak maybe, you know, around 2000, between 2005 and 2010. I mean, it even got mentioned in a West Wing episode at one point, for crying out loud. They had Mrs. Bartlett going to a NASCAR race. But I think that, I can't even tell you what the TV ratings are, which tell you a lot, but I don't think it's at its peak the way it was. I still think it's wildly popular. I think to call it a niche sport is unfair. I love hockey, as you guys know, but hockey is a niche sport. There's no way hockey's going to put 200,000 people in the stands for a race, or however many show up at Daytona, and a lot show up at many of the other races. So it's not in there with the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, but it probably is right in there with golf, which to me is the next most popular sport because it's way ahead of tennis now and probably ahead of hockey. So again, I'm speaking here out of total ignorance, so when people start tweeting at you or texting at you, what the hell is Feinstein talking about NASCAR? I say blame Paul.
Thank you. I accept.
John Feinstein with us. By the way, Paul, Daytona 500 ratings up 8% over last year.
I did not contribute to that.
I tuned in a little bit, but I can't.
I watched the highlights.
I can't sit here and say that I knew exactly when the race was starting.
I mean, our preview that we ran on Friday was outstanding during our show.
That's right.
Every player has a draft day story.
The Tennessee Titans select
This is running back Lindell White, and this is my draft story. I was in Park Hill at the recreation center I grew up playing football at. Norm Chow called, you know, it's the Titans, and he's like, we're taking you with the next pick. And, you know, I just remember throwing the phone down and started crying. When it finally, your name gets called and you see it go across the screen, there's nothing better than that.
The 2019 NFL Draft, coming April 25th on the home of Titans Radio. 104.5, The Zone.
John Feinstein with us. Joins us every Monday, recapping the national headlines. John, were you surprised by the settlement between the NFL and Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid on Friday?
I guess a little surprised, Jonathan, in the sense that it kind of came out of the blue. It wasn't like on our radar. It wasn't as if there had been speculation that a settlement was coming up. But I am not surprised that the two sides settled. I think that every legal expert I've heard talk about this made the point that without a smoking gun, like an email sent by the commissioner to all the owners or something like that, it's very hard to prove actual collusion. In the case of the Major League Baseball owners in the 1980s, there were smoking guns. There was correspondence, you know, back and forth suggesting that they not sign high-priced free agents for three straight years. This was different. I don't think there probably was a smoking gun, but I do think that when the arbitrator refused to throw the case out on summary judgment and said that he would hear the case, the NFL thought two things. One, we could lose, not likely, but we could lose, and that would be could cost an incredible amount of money, number one. And number two, even if you don't lose, you don't want all of this stuff coming out in public, all the things that were said, all whatever people and teams said to Kaepernick, to his lawyer, to his agent, whatever. So I think it was worth whatever money they paid, and I would imagine it was a lot to Kaepernick and less so to Eric Reid to make this go away. And that's why I honestly think what was most important to the owners was probably the confidentiality agreement more so than the money they paid, because they can afford the money. They would rather avoid further embarrassment.
This is where I think a lot of people are having trouble coming to grips with it from Kaepernick's side. He wants to kind of be the representative of the league's wrongdoing here, mm-hmm. and kind of silencing his social justice, and he's taking a deal that silences him.
Well, I don't think it does, Paul. It silences him on the specifics of the case. He can't come out and say, well, they settled because of this, they settled because of that, we had this evidence. But it doesn't silence him from, you know, they're talking about that maybe now that the case is settled, there might be, I saw his lawyer quoted as saying that maybe the Carolina Panthers might sign him. They have an owner who's very different politically than most of the other NFL owners, or that maybe Bob Kraft might sign him. Give Tom Brady a legit backup. But he still can come out and oppose police brutality. He could still kneel for the national anthem if he's ever in uniform again, or if he's not in uniform again. So I hear what you're saying, and I've read the same things that you're talking about, Paul. But I think all it does is it means he can't talk about the specifics of the case. It doesn't silence him.
Is he in the league next year?
My bet would be no. Again, it only takes one owner, and the owner of the Panthers might sign him just to upset the president, because he's not a big fan of the president, as you guys know. But my bet would be no. If I had to make a bet, it's a good thing I'm not a betting man, because if I was, I'd be broke. My bet would be no. But if somebody signed him, I wouldn't go, oh my God, that's the most incredible thing I've ever heard.
I was intrigued because you mentioned that the Panthers owner not a fan of Trump, but the Patriots are, and those were
Bob Kraft, yes.
Those were the two organizations mentioned,
right,
by the lawyer here. I was intrigued by the two organizations mentioned and the contrasting owners.
Right. Mark Garrigo, I think,
yep,
is the lawyer.
Garrigos, yep.
He may know something that we don't. I mean, it's possible, because I agree with you. I mean, obviously, among the owners who've given money to Trump, Kraft is as prominent as any.
What'd you think about, it was no coincidence that the day before the settlement came out, we heard that he allegedly asked for $20 million from the AAF to play. As a reporter kind of walking that back, what did you think of that coming out the day before?
Well, it's interesting the leaks that come out, quote-unquote, from people who cover pro football, because most of those who cover pro football, you know, basically are, I don't know what the right term is, but I don't want to say they're in bed with the owners, but they tend to be willing to take anonymous quotes from the ownership side of things. We saw all those stories the last 2 years about from these, quote, executives who say Kaepernick can't play anymore. All of a sudden he forgot how to play, even though he was a starting quarterback in the NFL his last year in the league in 2016, and all of a sudden he's not as good as Arena League football guys who are getting signed. So I think you used the right word. It's intriguing that leaked. And look, if I were Colin Kaepernick, given his history as a football player, and somebody wanted me to play in a minor league, and the AAF is a minor league, I would ask for a hell of a lot of money too.
Well, John, I'm going to bring this example up because you've brought it up multiple times. Michael Jordan's comment about not getting involved in politics because he wanted to be more marketable and Republicans buy sneakers too, or whatever it was.
Right.
Making a business decision. Colin Kaepernick had a Nike campaign where he said, believe in something even if it means sacrificing everything. He then turns around and takes a paycheck from the NFL to be silenced on the issue he felt he was right on in collusion. I don't think Jim Brown or Muhammad Ali would have taken a settlement check from someone to not talk about something. Help me out here where Colin Kaepernick isn't playing politics a bit to make some money and make a brand and make a name for himself, just like Michael Jordan didn't play politics to make some money and make a brand for himself.
Yeah, well, I think that, and there are different circumstances, obviously. I don't think when Kaepernick started this, you know, when he first stopped standing for the anthem, he was trying to make a market or a brand for himself. He was trying to make a point. It then became, I'm sure, a much larger issue than he ever dreamed it would become, and he became a much larger figure than he ever dreamed it would become. I think your point's well taken. He did take the money. He sort of falls into the category of every man has his price. Now, maybe Jim Brown didn't. Muhammad Ali, I don't believe, did. Again, different issues. Ali was facing jail and was willing to go to jail. Kaepernick was not facing jail here, obviously. It may be that he simply made a practical decision that his lawyer said, look, they're offering X dollars. I would think it's a lot of dollars. And the chances are, speaking legally, that we won't win this case. And you'll walk away with zero, and the NFL owners will claim vindication. At least this way, again, I'm speculating here, obviously, but at least this way, he can claim some kind of victory, because the owners did give him a large amount of money. And I think at some point how much money he was given will leak from somewhere. But that would be my best explanation, and I may be totally full of it.
John Feinstein joins us every Monday. John, thank you as always. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks. Look forward to it, guys. Thanks.
All right, John Feinstein with us, hitting the national headline.
Also working on President's Day, and he's in the D.C. area. I mean, President's Day's big there. Big.
That's true.
Join our active roster and be part of Team Hutton 104.5 and help the fight to end blood cancer. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Tennessee Man and Woman of the Year campaign is the nonprofit's largest annual fundraiser, and all funds raised provide life-saving blood cancer research. Just visit 1045thezone.com and make a tax-deductible donation. Plus, check out Hutton's event calendar, special giveaways, and more. The campaign runs through April 27th, so please donate now. Make someday today, because beating cancer is in our blood. More info at 1045thezone.com.